Everybody jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, rap. I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. This is the time of the week when we get together with some friends here in studio and we talk about the events of the week or whatever happens to come up. A lot of times it's not the events of the week. It's just whatever, you know, is interesting and within the area of expertise of the guests that I have. Today we've got a many times repeat offender and sometimes even fill in for me as a host, Danny Zimmern, the president of Pensacola Mardi Gras. Danny, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Andrew.
Always good to have you.
It is great to be here.
It's
great to be seen and not viewed.
That's right. And we also have Frank White, who, Frank, I'm just going to say this. Since the last time you were here on The Wrap, this is your second time, since the last time, something has changed in your public status, yeah?
Yes, something has changed. I filed to run for the Florida Senate.
Woohoo!
So Senate District 1 is Escambia County, Santa Rosa County, and the northern part of Okaloosa County.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Doug Broxson is the current senator. Our Constitution kicks him out, so mm-hmm. term limits is forcing him to leave. And so I filed to run to follow him.
So you persuaded him to get out of your way?
No, not at all. Not at all. The voters of Florida putting that in their Constitution did that.
I gotcha. Yeah, no, we always kind of wondered who was going to step in after him. And, of course, after your bid for Attorney General, it makes sense that you'd look for something like that. So
it's a super important
it
seat.
Really, I mean, mm-hmm. especially because, I mean, Broxson is so influential right now with the Appropriations Committee and everything. I mean, you know, it's one of the challenges we have in the panhandle is getting panhandle people into positions of power, real power.
And keeping them.
And keeping them, right. Because, you know, you got to get reelected. And then, of course, after 8 years, all of that goes away and you got to build again, right?
Absolutely. And in Northwest Florida, we have 5-6 elected representatives in the Florida legislature. There are 30 within a few square miles in Miami. You know, mm-hmm. the same thing in Orlando and Tampa. So it just those numbers really matter, and in the area getting good people in, staying, rising to positions of seniority, and leading in the chamber can really make a difference.
Right, absolutely. No, it's
Senator Broxson's a great example of that.
Agreed.
How fantastic he's been for Northwest Florida, and continues to be.
And,
head of appropriations for the Senate.
And this is no secret anyway. I've told him, and I heard him tell somebody else the same thing when he was introducing me the other day. Is I wasn't convinced about Senator Broxson in the beginning. I wasn't on Team Broxson. I have come around. I mean, I see him doing very effective things over and over and over again. And and I've told him this. I think he's done a fantastic job for Northwest Florida.
He has been a great friend to Northwest Florida and has really delivered.
Yeah.
And he listens. He has a fantastic staff who both understand the issues and understand our district. Senator Broxson has just been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and even though Kevin had to leave his office to run for commissioner, which he did not win that bid, but then Janice Gilley steps in when she was, forced out, I think rather unfairly, definitely unfairly, from the county commission being the county administrator. But that turns out to be a win for everybody, too, just because she's fantastic in that role and, of course, a great asset. And he's, one thing I'd say about Broxson is he's not the guy out self-promoting.
Absolutely.
And so
just the opposite, honestly.
Yeah, like he's always but every time I'm asking people, hey, who's involved in this? Oh, Broxson's involved in this. Oh, okay. Like, for instance, we're dealing with this issue at NES Pensacola, right? I think it was almost $500 million in damage from Hurricane Sally. I know it was over 400, a number that they were kind of reluctant to say at first because it's such a big price tag. Getting the Navy to pay just to restore something that's going to always be in the vulnerability path. I mean, we are a hurricane town, our origins are in hurricanes, right? But small parts of that problem have unique pressure points attached to them, like the hangar that the Blue Angels operate out of is not good. I mean, it's really a mess. It's, where they have netting in there to keep the ceiling from falling on the planes. Like, it's bad needing all of this repair. And, everybody's working on the problem, but it's not easy to get that price tag. What, $20 million? I think is the number to get that hangar replaced.
I think it's really more than that.
Probably would be
at the end of the day. So, just my perspective on that. That's why we need great leadership around here, because you have to build some consensus.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about federal money, so you've got to have a decent step up the ladder, right? So Tallahassee having a Northwest Florida guy is hard enough, much less getting some attention. When every military base across the country is looking for funding, we're trying to get the Department of Defense to fund Pensacola, NAS Pensacola, for a hangar to keep the Blue Angels here. I think what's really interesting about that is people say they'll always live here and just take it for granted. And I don't think you can take that for granted. I think there's other places that would love to have the Blue Angels and would make their own case. So if they did leave, they would try to keep them if that happened, so that we don't want that to happen. People don't realize that in the NFL playoff game last year, the Jacksonville Jaguars had Blue Angels stickers on their helmets.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I remember that.
That's not a very distant move.
No, that was, hey, world.
We can do this too.
It's kind of a wake-up call when you really peel the layers back.
And people, you're absolutely right. You know, it is very easy to just assume that, look at what we've done. We've got the planes are up on the interstate, and we got the tower that almost got undone, I have to say. We got the support of the local community and the museum. And, you know, there's a lot of advantages to being here, but the Blue Angels, like any other mission, could be somewhere else, had been in the past, somewhere else. And, you know, if things went wrong, if they were displaced for a year or two by a storm, you know, or even just the construction of the hangar, as, you know, my own boss was quoted in the PNJ story about this recently, you know, there's always the possibility that could go away if we're not really prepared for it. Right, Frank?
Absolutely. And it's something that our elected leadership, it must be job number one, and they've got to all align and do whatever it takes. It is a big number, and it is across the state level, federal level, local level, to find the resources to, you know, secure that mission here at NAS.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to, you know, again, and previous base commanders and, you know, other folks have made the case, like, you know, you need to think about this because anything can go away, and we don't want to, but just try to imagine the impact on tourism and tourism dollars. I mean, the financial footprint of the Blue Angels is pretty small in the grand scheme of NAS Pensacola's money. And, you know, they're, you know, pretty small by comparison with the, you know, what is it, 5,000, something like that on base? It might be more than that. I forget now. So that's not the issue. The issue is what they do for us as an identity, as an economy, as a recreational destination.
Andrew, you're right on. And it reminds me a little bit of the BP oil spill, where, you know, then there was a clear economic damage to all of us from the BP oil spill, but also just, you know, it ripped part of us out. You know, we love fishing. We love our beaches. It hit us at that level that was, it's the same sort of thing with the Blue Angels. If it were to, the idea of it going away is just, it'd do the same thing. It'd rip a piece of us, a piece of our soul out, I think.
Absolutely.
It would be terrible. I mean, it's really kind of who we are around here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would take away a ton of our identity.
And we clearly continue to do everything to build them and to build the relationship, but you just, you know, you always have to think from the Navy's perspective. And if you got, you know, this big infrastructure cost and somebody else comes along with a sweet offer and, you know, you got to always work to make that relationship good. I mean, that's just a basic, you know, relational advice component. 8:46 on News Radio 92.3. We're talking to Danny Zimmer and Frank White. It's The Wrap. We'll get traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. Just one accident to let you know about. It's not causing just a little bit of delay. North Palafox Street and Fairfield Drive and Tejard Drive. Seeing some delays around that. So that's the only thing with traffic right now. Good morning. Traffic on the fives.
All right. Thanks so much, John. So the big news story this week has obviously been the Trump indictment, this third round of indictments against him for behavior leading up to the January 6th insurrection, and basically all of the stuff around trying to affect the election, trying to defraud and conspire to defraud, and has happened in previous times. He goes out, says, "I didn't do it," and his support goes up. You know, indictments drive up the support for him. As a legal matter, you know, you ran to be the attorney general. You know, you're a lawyer, obviously. How do you read this case, Frank?
I see it as political, and which is a shame. It's, you know, it's banana republic kind of stuff that we've had now. It's another week, another Trump indictment. I mean, I think this is number four. It's absurd, and I hate it that this is where, you know, they're just the erosion of the rule of law, and we respect prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
We have historically, and this tarnishes that, I think, that brand of the prosecutor, and that's a bad thing for the rule of law.
What I said when this first came out was, if this had come on its own first time there was a charge allegation against him, it'd be one thing. But it's after this never-ending parade of harassing efforts to try to dismantle, put him out of office or whatever you want to call it, that it's hard to take. It's almost like at this point, there's almost nothing you could say that wouldn't make us think it was political, because that's all it's been so far. And then make this case all, you know, you want me to take this seriously on top of everything else.
It is crazy. It is a very, very complicated time to think about what we're going through. I'm sorry.
Turn your phone off, Danny.
what we're going through as a country. I am a little bit hopeful that the Trump team will have the ability to subpoena people and sort of relitigate if there was election fraud or problems across the country. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, they're going to have to, or else that, you know, they've got to build some facts. It's just so dangerous, and the idea, I don't know, it is an absolute crazy time. I was in Washington all of last week. We took our 10-year-old goddaughter, and it is really, really crazy and kind of interesting how it all goes. We've become so divided, you know. The street vendors are selling, you know, both party stuff. They're both ugly, and they're selling them out of the same. They're selling them out of the same, you know, wagon or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's crazy, and you know, people.
Well, it's like the arms merchants, right? You know, we'll sell to both sides. That's fine. Yeah. You know, all we want is war.
But you know, when you go like to a SEC football game, you wear a shirt that has the logo on it or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's what everybody in Washington's doing. Is, you know, they show up wearing, you know, either a Trump something shirt or a Biden something shirt or whatever.
Yes. The difference with SEC football and you know, the Washington, D.C. is that in Washington, D.C., we've now weaponized the criminal justice system.
Right.
Right.
And this is the first criminal indictment of a former president in American history. So, you know, it's just it's reached a level that everyone should be alarmed. And it's exactly why every time there's yet another indictment by another agenda-driven, ideological, you know, political, democratic operative, you see Trump's numbers go up.
Well,
and it's people are rejecting it. They see it for what it is.
So, Andrew, it's really interesting. That's what we're talking about, right? Have you seen those timelines where a Hunter Biden something happens and then the next day? So what
within
are we talking about?
Within a day or two every time.
We're not talking about Hunter Biden. We're talking about Trump.
That's right. Yeah. And that, like, there are so many dimensions to the Biden corruption allegations. You know, Burisma in Ukraine is really only one slice of it. Then you've got all these Twitter files stuff that's an amazing story that the Biden administration is pressuring Facebook to deprioritize certain news sources like the New York Post, not just censoring the one story, but to try to get them to be less visible in people's feeds and instead promote what they consider to be more reliable sources. And they're, you know, repeated efforts to do that. That is an enormous story, and I think a First Amendment violation by the Biden administration. And yet, where do you hear that? I mean, you know, maybe on Fox, and yes, Fox is reporting it, but, you know, you're not seeing that. I look at the headlines across the board, ABC, NBC, New York Times, Washington Post, all the time. You know, I don't see that in the regular coverage, and I'm like, my God, this is a huge story.
Absolutely. You're totally right, Andrew.
You know, this Orwellian stuff, that's what's the most scary of it all to me. If nobody talks about it, is it a thing or not?
Right. Yeah. And if you do talk about it, do they change it later?
Yeah.
You know, you get punished for talking about it. The stuff around the social media is so difficult because you have this, you know, private companies, right? For-profit companies operating with certain kinds of legal immunity. But they are clearly massively influential in how people think, what they think about, what they know, what they take for knowledge. And, you know, I hate to agree with a weird little TikTok video we played earlier from a girl who was, you know, genuinely off a rocker. But the one thing she said I agree with is, you know, the power of the algorithm is tremendous. You know, everybody's worried about AI and deep fakes and all of the stuff that comes with replacing people's jobs. But, you know, the algorithm is a kind of AI, and the way that shapes the information you see, it doesn't tell you what to believe, but it tells you what to think about, you know, that kind of thing is, I mean, it's horrifying to think about that.
Andrew, this is your business. This is your industry. You know, you've dedicated your career to it. do we need more regulation of it? I mean, what do you see as a path forward?
Well, on the social media, I think yes. I mean, I think they've lost their ability to be protected by the Section 230. I don't think they should be operating. They're acting as publishers. And because they agreed to the Biden administration's demands, they became publishers. And so I don't think they get protection the way they wanted. I think in the beginning it was useful to protect the billboards from stuff, but bulletin boards. But I think they definitely should be regulated. The shape of the regulation, I frankly can't see it becoming worse than it is now. So I'm almost willing to try something and see if there, you know, if there's any effectiveness to it. But yeah, that's. What do you think? You're the lawyer.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I mean, that's the way I think it was come to that for sure.
And certainly like the public expectation, right? Like, I know that news sources are going to pick and choose what stories to cover, and they're going to have perhaps a view or no view. But the expectation on social media is, I can see what I want to see. Well, no, you can see what they want to show you. And that distinction is enormous. And if I want to show to other people and they're wanting to hear what I have to say, but they can't or find me shadow banned or their feed deprioritized, that kind of stuff is clearly violating what we all think of as the sort of public space, the town square kind of mindset that we have about social media.
Well, they could tell how long you look at something, literally, and put that into some algorithm to see mm-hmm. what it is you like or don't like, and much less if you click on something or touch on something and whatever. It's just crazy, and to the way that could be manipulated to send some message.
Yeah, I mean, and I see parallels too. In we see stories about the books in our kids' schools.
Yeah,
and there are published. Who's deciding what books go into those schools? Well, mm-hmm. it's really more the publishers and the big it's big publishing companies
sure.
that push. Have published the lists and pushed packages on libraries,
which cater in their design to the biggest states that have the highest purchasing capability: Texas and California. Now Florida. They're having to deal with a different kind of Florida, but historically, was it a surprise that you saw this bias in your textbooks when California was the one setting the pace that the publishers would try to cater to, because they certainly don't want to lose the deal with California? That was always a problem, right?
Absolutely. You also see it in Governor DeSantis and the College Board, which mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. a nonprofit organization that publishes curriculum for schools all across the country, and they're getting suddenly right here, right before the start of the school year, reacting to a law that that was passed months ago
right.
in Florida.
You could have dealt with this, right?
Absolutely, and we see an agenda that they're pushing through a little portion of a psychology course that mm-hmm. It's clear in Florida, set the rules, set the law, and now here at the last minute, the College Board with clearly an agenda is. All of a sudden saying, DeSantis has banned psychology, the study of psychology
right.
In Florida schools. Totally false and totally political.
Completely. False.
What I remember about the, the strategy of Marxist, change, whether you're talking about Saul Alinsky or whether you're talking about, going into the Hegelian dialectic or any of that stuff is, stretch the boundaries, create a new normal around a compromise from an extreme you didn't need to get in the first place, create a crisis. When there's no crisis there, because a crisis raises attention and shifts your focus. I mean, there's nothing we're seeing that's sort of brand new, but it's just being used so much more effectively than I've ever seen on the, and on the national scale as well. We're talking to Danny Zimmer and Frank White, a couple of friends here for The Wrap. Let's get another Traffic on the Fives from John Pickens.
Everything's looking good right now. I-10, I-110 all flowing smoothly. Highway 90's looking good too. That's a look at your Traffic on the Fives.
All right, thanks so much. Good news, it's almost football season.
Wait, let me yes. ask. Let me ask you, Andrew. I know you want to switch subjects. We only have a couple minutes.
Yeah, all right.
Is Donald Trump going to show up for the debate?
See, I don't think he can. Psychologically, I think he knows he wins in that environment because he's great at. He can't stand to not be there dominating. Yeah, there's been times when he's not gone to a thing and then he's done his own counter programming or whatever. I think that he knows it works for him to show up and slay. And he does. I mean, what do you think is going to happen in a debate between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump? I'm a DeSantis fan. I prefer DeSantis. I think he's the, but I don't think he wins in a debate environment.
No, and the, and it's very interesting because the dynamic is such that the candidates can't really come out attacking.
Right, right.
The Trump, because they might end up being on a short list.
Right? That's right.
In fact,
Ramaswamy might be the VP candidate or whatever. And you know, I mean, same for Mike Pence. I mean, Mike Pence. I love Mike. I think he's got great ideas. He's a real conservative. He's a very smart guy. He's done it all. But on a debate stage in the modern American culture of what we like to like, Mike Pence doesn't sell compared to Trump. I mean, it's not even a contest.
The one thing that's for sure is if Donald Trump is in the debate, we will all tune in and watch.
That's right? That's right.
All-time biggest show ever, whatever.
Yeah, and at the same token, I think there's a rationale of him not showing up, which is that what does he have to gain by being there? And what does he have to lose by not going? And the answer is he's got nothing to gain and nothing to lose. But I just don't think he would be willing to avoid it, even for the look like he was trying to avoid it would be, offensive to him. Well, Frank White, thank you for joining. It's good when good people run.
Let's support Frank White for State Senate.
State Senate. And Danny
D1.
Zimmer, Principal of Mardi Gras. Gentlemen, thanks
don't
for showing up today.
Don't support me for anything.
We'll see y'all on Monday.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.